saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole world over.
I'm going to move the microphone closer to you.
I might have any voice issues.
Because it seems like you're not being heard as well as I have a big mouth.
Oh.
So there's never any problem with hearing me.
I'll try to be louder.
Yeah, it's just... Right. All right. So what's new with you?
Very lost.
You've had a lot going on.
Yeah. So, I got canceled twice. I got canceled on Monday from coming back from New York.
Oh, yeah.
And because of the snow.
Right.
Which was melted by the afternoon.
So uh-huh. Like, yeah,
couldn't
right.
get onto another
Thanks
flight.
A bunch.
Yeah. Couldn't yep. get onto another flight until Wednesday at 7:55. And then... My mom and my aunt decided, oh, we're going to change that at the very last minute Tuesday night. We're going to change that to 11:25 in the morning. That was my only day to go out to the city.
Oh.
So that got screwed up.
Yeah.
So.
Well, shite.
Yeah. So then that flight ended up being canceled anyway due to the fog. So then we couldn't come home until.
So you were basically stuck in New York until Thursday. You're gonna.
Does it?
I mean, actually, yeah. Like, you're. I mean, I'm always really loud, and you're. Like, my vocal pattern is like this, and yours is like this.
Right.
Yeah. No, that actually does seem better now that you're sitting on the table. Oh, my.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But what was really nice is that on the plane going to New York and the plane coming back, Both flights, there wasn't anyone sitting between me and my mom. It was like, yes.
That is nice.
Of course, I fell asleep with my mouth hanging open. And then I woke myself up going.
Yeah. I try really hard to sleep on planes, but I just can't. I don't know if it has something to do with, like, anxiety or something, but I just cannot. I'm like, nope.
Oh, I'm out like that. I really need to invest in one of those neck pillows.
Yeah. So, but Passover was good?
Passover was nice. There were 48 people.
Oh, holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Oh,
I thought it was
that's
gonna
good.
Be, yeah, I thought it was going to be like this really long 3-hour service, which some of them can be.
I'm
no,
okay.
It was about half an hour, so that wasn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I know nothing about it, so I find that very interesting. That
next year I'm having it, so you're invited.
Yay!
Just remind
I don't know that you.
I forget everything.
I don't know that you want me at Passover. Because I'm probably closer to being an atheist than I have been in my entire life.
So you'll just and learn
it's just
something
like,
new.
Yeah.
Just learn something.
Yeah, no. I'm totally there for the food and the meeting of the people. I think that's cool. But yeah, cool. So you're behind in everything.
I'm behind in everything
now because of your flight.
Yes, I had it all laid out. I was going to do 3 panels a day to have my 18 panels finished. So my 18 panels I got finished today at 1:30.
Okay.
And then I was able to paint. And I'm so happy about that. You know, it's my tension reliever, my go-to thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now I'm ready to teach class tomorrow. And, over the weekend I hung up my students from the last class, made their mosaic windows, and I was able to install them in the hallway at Bonaventure that has the ramp with the, glass black windows.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So,
Yeah. Cool.
So they look really nice.
Yeah. Nice.
So.
Yeah. Okay, so you had to do your panels, and you had to go to New York.
Yes.
And that was like your, that was all you had to do, but it took you like 3 days.
3 days to come home. We could have driven.
Right, could have driven and been home quicker.
Yeah. But that fog was pretty foggy, but it was very weird because it was really foggy for maybe an hour and a half. And then it cleared up, but I guess it had a hard time. People couldn't get in.
Yeah.
And all along the eastern seaboard, I guess there were problems.
Let's see, what's new with me?
Yeah.
I had to get new glasses.
And they look very
so
sharp.
I did that.
You look cool.
I feel like I kind of look like Bono.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's a bad thing.
You look cool.
It used to be that I looked like Jack Osborne. Because, you know, I have shorter hair, and the way I was styling it was, like, spiky. So, the facial recognition shit on Facebook would always, like, be like, Jack Osborne, and I'd be like, no.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's not me. But I haven't gotten any notifications yet that I'm Bono, so.
Okay.
We'll have to wait and see.
Jack Osborne.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Well, it's gone now. It's long gone. That hairstyle, it's long gone.
Okay.
Now I'm just rocking the undercut, which is why I look like Bono.
Looks good.
These glasses.
What'd you do for Easter?
Oh, God. We ate ham.
Good. A lot of ham?
Yeah. No. Just some ham. We don't do anything for Easter. Like, the day after, we go to Walgreens and get cheap candy, and that's like, yay, Easter. Yeah, no, we don't like celebrate or do anything.
We don't go over to
No, because that's a church day. So they're at church all day.
Oh.
And I wouldn't partake in that anyway.
Right.
So yeah, no, we usually just find, you know what, a decent ham and have some ham and have some potatoes.
Bought me a ham.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
I don't know when we're cooking that, but.
Well, hey. We're coming over next Saturday. Not next Saturday, Saturday after.
Yeah.
You could cook it then.
I don't know.
I'd be okay with ham.
We'll have to discuss it, because I bet he's going to want to do something on his smoker grill.
Oh, he's going to want to go all fancy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He hasn't completely figured it out yet, so I'm not sure.
We'll yeah,
have to think about it.
Maybe while we're there, we should all have a talk about Elisa Lam and that whole scenario, the haunted hotel, the Cecil Hotel.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's like a big thing, and I think it'd actually be really interesting to get his shrinky dink perspective on it. Because I think we talked briefly about
we
it, but it wasn't like it. Yeah. So maybe what I'll do is, because it's a Saturday that we're supposed to record, maybe I'll just bring all the shit.
Oh, that could be
and
fun.
Then we'll have like a Haunthead's feast.
Oh.
And we can
that
record
could be
the
kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we only have one cat left in the house.
Oh, you do?
So,
Is Sophie, that recent? That?
Yeah, Sophie moved out.
Oh,
and
okay.
She
and she
cats.
Took a cat. Ah.
Yeah, we had three in the house. So.
Oh, she took two cats.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Well,
that's a lot of cats.
They're certified support animals.
Oh.
So,
yeah. I always think that's really funny when cats are certified support animals.
It is kind of funny.
Because, like, cats don't give a shit about anybody but themselves.
You know what? They do. Sophie's do. They can tell when she's... They do. They go to her and...
Huh. I don't know. I mean,
they
I see,
love on her
I understand, like,
mood.
With a dog, because dog is man's best friend, and dog, you know, whatever, and, but cats are like, I'll come to you when
think.
I'm in the mood.
I was surprised, but they really do support her.
Interesting. All right.
I think that's interesting. I'm not a huge cat lover, but I like the cat we had.
I liked my cat. But now my cat is dead. So.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss my cat. In case you guys can't hear it, Emerson is currently on the main floor of the house having a conniption.
And Emerson is not a parrot.
Yeah, she is. She's a an Indian ringneck. She's actually the largest of the parakeets and the smallest of the parrots. So she walks a line with her little grub feet. Yeah.
How come you were never interested in, or maybe you were, in the bigger ones?
Oh, God, no. No. Well, first off, they live for like 100 years.
Okay.
Like, they live a long time. She'll live for 35. Okay. So she's got probably like 29 years left on her. In captivity, they live a lot longer because there's no like natural selection taking her out.
Right.
But yeah, no, she is plenty big. Because when she bites you, it's quite painful.
Really?
And it does a fair bit of damage. Yeah. Oh. Well, yeah, because her bill is hooked.
Okay.
So when she bites down on something, she not only bites down, she also grinds.
Oh.
So like she's been sitting on my shoulder before and has bit down on the cartilage in my ear. And I did not even know. I was hysterical. I didn't even know what to do because there was so much pain. And the bird is on me and I can't get it off and she's not letting go. And Joanne's trying to get her off. And it was just like this big... It was like a fucking Monty Python skit.
And she just did it out of the blue?
Just whenever she feels like it.
Oh, no.
Dude, parrots are fucking... You didn't know parrots are psycho?
Well,
they're psycho.
Years,
oh my God. No, they're psycho. Yeah, they're crazy. They just do whatever they want, whenever they want to, because they're like two-year-olds. And she'll be a two-year-old her entire life. She'll never grow up. Oh, my God. But, yeah, and then there was, like, there wasn't a lot of blood, but there was blood.
Oh.
And it was, yeah, it was very dramatic. Very, very.
Was she in the naughty corner for quite
dramatic.
A long time?
She's a little bit better now, but, like, I think that she doesn't want to come too close to me because she thinks that I'm going to start yelling randomly. She doesn't put two and two together. She doesn't say, well, because I bit Mommy's ear... she started screaming. It's just, you know, I bit Mommy's ear and then there was a loud noise and I mostly, for the most part, ignored it and continued to bite Mommy's ear. But yeah, she doesn't put two and two together. She doesn't understand it's not something that she's supposed, you know, not supposed to do.
Oh.
Cause you can't train them. Like, you can train them to like step up and go in your cage or, you know, do a little dance for this cracker or whatever, but you can't be like, okay, now you shouldn't bite because biting is wrong and we don't bite our friends. Do you understand? Yes, you do. Okay, never do it again. Cool. Good talk.
Oh boy.
No, there's never any confirmation from a parrot that they're doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. They're being a parrot, essentially. But yeah, after her, I don't think I'll get another one.
Okay.
I think I'm good. It's a lot of work and there's like a lot of enrichment stuff that you have to do for them. And, it's just a lot. Okay. I'm trying to think of if I have any news. I think the only news that I have is, last month we surpassed 400 views on the blog.
Cool.
I think we're up over 5,000 listens on the podcast. I'm pretty sure. Oh, over 6,000.
Oh, wow.
Listens. So we have...
That's pretty cool.
We have 6,038. And we have a new follower, which I will now add. Oh, wait. We have 3 new followers.
Oh.
E.M. Rumbolt. And on a Mostef? I probably just bastardized that, so I'm sorry. And Jan Dressing 23 just followed us on our podcast
hello,
page.
Hello, new peeps.
Howdy do. Yep, there's lots of fun to be had once we get started. Yeah. Which, you know, by the way, everybody, this is Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. And I am your host, Janine Mercer, and as always, I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven, welcome.
The lovely and incomparable Mimi Steven, who is worked to death, but is here anyway. So she's going to bat for you. That's the Mimi thing to do.
All right.
Go to bat for your pals.
That's right.
All right.
But it doesn't give Miss Mercer much time.
It really doesn't. Actually, you know what? This is going to be the first episode that we record and release on the same day.
Ooh.
Yeah. So right now it is the 9th, and it will be the 9th when this is released.
Oh, today's the 9th?
So today's the 9th, yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was the
10th. No, 4-9.
Why? I'm so out of
it. It is 4-9, and all is well. Oh, God, except I have shit in my eye. Oh, well, not literal shit in my eye.
Well, I'm very glad it's not.
You're shit in your eye. No. It's not nearly as serious as that. I'm sure it's an eyelash.
Oh,
all right. So, what do we have today?
Well, I decided to go back to New Orleans to Cemetery Number 1 and just talk about a couple of the main ghost stories. Mm. Mm-hmm. That come out of there?
Yeah, yeah.
So
cool.
What about you?
A little bit more about Marie Laveau in this one?
No.
She was the last one.
Yeah, she was the last one. And this one, I'm just going on to just two other ghost stories.
Oh, okay. Coolie beans.
Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't have much time, so I did.
Well, you did the best you could, given the circumstances.
I owe you guys a really good one.
Given the circumstances, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
I have got the Amityville Horror House. So it's a little bit of supposed haunted history, and a little bit of true crime, because I know that there are a lot of people who listen to us that also enjoy true crime podcasts. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to like the quintessential American ghost story, there's really nothing closer than the Amityville Horror.
Right.
In my opinion. You know, I grew up on this movie. I watched it, I don't know how many times. I watched it for research, for this episode. I've read the book over and over and over again. I've also looked at, all of these outside sources, to kind of get a feel as to what was going on there. Uh-huh. Because some of it is very confusing, and of course DeFeo just contradicts himself
right. All
the time, and then the Lutzes just contradict themselves all right. The time, and it's like, okay, did any of this actually happen? Did some of it actually happen, and the rest of it was just sensationalized because you wanted to make money, or did none of it happen and you just wanted to make money? That's really the question. That's the question that everybody asks about the Amityville Horror House.
I sort of think, this is just me, but I sort of think that some things, strange things happened.
Yeah.
But I think everything was blown out of proportion. But yeah. I think that there's still a basis for something.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, to take it apart, I can only imagine would take...
Right. Yeah.
Years.
Well, and honestly, the blog post for this particular episode is mostly the majority of it is research material, because there is so much information about this that I had to literally go and pick and choose the sources and then use the source content while referencing it so that I could get the whole story, but so that it wouldn't take me like 4 hours to be like, okay, and now I'm going to tell you about the Amityville Horror House, and right. 4.5 hours later, and we're done, you know? Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that you guys prefer to have something that's, like, closer to an hour long, so, you know, we try to keep it in there, but...
Well, then it's a good thing mine is a little short today.
Yeah, there you go. So,
works out well.
Yeah, when the sixth page of this piece was printing, I was like, oh, shit. and then it printed two more pages after that. So, it's quite long, but.
Well, maybe you should go first and then.
Yeah. You think I should go first?
Yeah. And then if it's really up to the time limit, we can just I can redo mine for next week.
No, you should still do yours. You trying to jump ship?
Well,
we're not sinking yet. God. Oh my. Okay. So I mentioned today when you were on your way here that I was doing some additional, like, last-minute research on YouTube. There was a YouTube video called The Amityville Murders, and it was put out around 2016 by Paranormal Live TV. Okay. So they put out a documentary about, you know, DeFeo and this psychic medium who supposedly is, like, you know, working with him and whatever. In 2016, DeFeo claimed that he didn't have too much time left on his punch card. And he was going to punch out pretty soon. So apparently this psychic medium begins channeling him through herself and, like, goes back to the scene of the crime and, like, goes through all the information from the police and goes into the woods and finds, like, an Indian head coin that he buried there however many years ago. Now, from my perspective, she just went into the woods and walked up to a tree and picked up a coin and was like, there it is. Now, the murders happened in, like, 74. So, 1974. So this coin has been sitting there by this tree since 1974? Yeah. No. Come on. Yeah. But yeah, so this lady's name is Jackie Barrett.
She's the medium.
She's the medium. And the episode follows her into the state prison, where she actually physically meets face-to-face with DeFeo. Which, I mean, it's pretty, it seems pretty compelling until you start to get to, like, and then I went to the cemetery and I channeled him and, like, whatever. And I don't, there's something funny about it. There's something in there that smells a little off. I don't know what, I don't know if it's just a last-ditch effort for him to make some money off this. Somebody else, you know, riding on his coattails trying to make some money off it. I have no idea, but. So, yeah, we have a little kind of a skit, I guess, where we read out the actual 911 call that a gentleman named Joey Yeswit sends to the places to the Suffolk County Police in 1974. So yeah, I'll just kind of start and we'll get there. You gotta help me. I think my mother and father are shot. Around 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 13th, 1974, 23-year-old Ronald DeFeo entered Henry's Bar in Amityville, Long Island, New York, and delivered the above statement to its patrons. So, DeFeo and a small group of people go to 112 Ocean Avenue, which was located near the bar, and they find that DeFeo's parents were indeed dead. They were both shot twice. Upon realizing the situation, DeFeo's friend Joe Yeswit contacts the police, and he has the following exchange with the dispatcher. And this content comes from a website called True Legends at truelegends.info. Actually a really great resource. Operator, this is Suffolk County Police. May I help you?
We have a shooting here. DeFeo.
Sir, what is your name?
Joey Yeswit.
Can you spell that?
Yeah. Yeswit. Yeswit. Yeswit.
Wit. Your phone number?
I don't even know if it's here. I don't have a phone number here.
Okay, where are you calling from?
It's in Amityville. Call the Amityville Police, and it's right off Ocean Avenue in Amityville.
Austin?
Ocean Avenue. What the?
Ocean Avenue. Off of where?
It's right off Merrick Road. Ocean Avenue.
Merrick Road. What's the problem, sir?
It's a shooting.
There's a shooting? Anybody hurt?
Ha!
Anybody hurt?
Yeah. It's a Everybody's dead.
What do you mean everybody's dead?
I don't know what happened. Kid came running in the bar. He says everybody in the family was killed, and we came down here.
Hold on a second, sir. And then at this point, a police officer takes over the call. Hello?
Hello.
What's your name?
My name is Joe Yeswit.
George Edwards?
Joe Yeswit.
How do you spell it?
What? How many times do I have to tell you? Yeswit.
Where are you at?
I'm on Ocean Avenue.
What number?
I don't have a number. There's no number on the front.
What number on the house?
I don't even know that.
Where are you at? Ocean Avenue and what?
In Amityville. Call up the Amityville police and have someone come down here. They know the family.
Amityville.
Yeah, Amityville.
Okay, now tell me what's wrong.
I don't know. Guy comes running in the bar. Guy come running in the bar and said there, his mother and father are shot. We ran down to his house and everybody in the house is shot. I don't know how long, you know, so,
What's the address of the house?
Hold on. Let me go look up the number. All right, hold on. 112 Ocean Avenue, Amityville.
Is that Amityville or North Amityville?
Amityville, right on south of Merrick Road.
Is that right in the village limits?
It's in the village limits, yeah.
Okay, what's your phone number?
I don't even have one. There's no number on the phone.
All right, where are you calling from? Public phone?
No, I'm calling from the house because I don't see a number on the phone.
You're at the house itself?
Yeah.
How many bodies are there?
I think they said four.
There's four?
Yeah.
All right, you stay there at the house, and I'll call Amityville Village PD, and they'll come down. So that's essentially the telephone conversation. The Suffolk County Police took a lot of flack for this kind of debacle on the phone. Apparently, their evaluation of the crime scene was also very questionable because they didn't really seek out any alternative suspects. Okay. It was, hey, look, here's DeFeo, and he says that he threw a gun here, so let's go find it, and whatever. So there was never any question that there was anybody else involved besides DeFeo. And DeFeo has, I mean, he said, I don't know how many different people are to blame. He's blamed the devil, himself. He's blamed voices in his head that have told him, or like voices that he heard in the house telling him to kill his whole family. He's blamed like this hooded figure that he saw in the house. He claimed that his sister, Dawn, actually shot his mother. He says that he only shot his father. And then Dawn shot his mother. And then he said, well, we got a real shit show up in here. Like, I need to do something to take care of this mess. So he goes off somewhere to dispose of the gun and shit like that. And then when he comes back, he finds out that, like, the kids are shot and they're dead. And Dawn is apparently up on, like, the third floor landing looking down at him. And he's like, what the fuck happened? Like, I told you not to do anything. And she's like, well, you know, whatever. And then I guess he shoots her. So, I don't know.
But did she get rid of the gun before the kids were...
Yeah, but she had a gun.
So he went and got rid of his gun.
So he went and got rid of his gun, but didn't get rid of hers, apparently. I don't know. And this story, like, changes. Mm-hmm. It's just really crazy. So, let's see here. There was also another individual that DeFeo says was in the house that night, and he turned around after he had shot his father and saw this individual in the doorway. He won't say who this person is. He just says that there was another person there, and he thinks that he also did some of the shooting. So it's, yeah. The sign that hung outside 112 Ocean Avenue, it's now 108 Ocean Avenue, because they're trying to erase the history.
Okay.
Read, High Hopes. Now, undoubtedly, those who entered the residence were dreaming of making this house a home, and for the DeFeo family, this was just not to be. Ronald DeFeo Jr., then only 23, methodically murdered his entire family within the walls of what would become known as the Amityville Horror House. DeFeo systematically moved from bedroom to bedroom, shooting his parents, Ronald DeFeo Sr., 43, and Louise, 42, his sisters Dawn, aged 18, Allison, 13, and his brothers Mark, 11, and John, 9, with a shotgun blast from a .35 caliber Marlin rifle, and he shot them in the back. They were lying on their stomachs, and he shot them in the back. So DeFeo first told police that he had arrived home to find his family murdered, and then he ran to a local bar for help. But later he would amend his original statement, claiming that the voices in the home told him to commit the murders. DeFeo's trial began on October 14, 1975. He and his defense lawyer, William Weber, mounted an affirmative defense of insanity, with DeFeo claiming that he killed his family in self-defense because he heard voices plotting against him. The insanity plea was supported by the psychiatrist for the defense, Dr. Daniel Schwartz. The psychiatrist for the prosecution, Dr. Harold Zolan, maintained that although DeFeo was an abuser of heroin and LSD, he had antisocial personality disorder and was aware of his actions at the time of the crime. On November 21, 1975, DeFeo pled guilty to 6 counts of second-degree murder. On December 4, 1975, Judge Thomas Stark sentenced DeFeo to 6 concurrent sentences of 25 years to life. So, dude is still in prison.
Is he alive?
Yes. Yep, he's currently held at a correctional facility in the town of Fallsburg in New York. And all of his appeals and requests to the parole board to date have been denied.
Does he take visitors?
Apparently he took this psychic medium's visitation, but, you know, I mean, there might have been money involved. Mm. So
we should see if he'd visit with us.
God, I'm gonna meet that crazy guy.
Make him a cake.
A cake with a file in it? Why would you do that? Oh, God. So, DeFeo still resides at Sullivan. He's Sullivan Correctional Facility. He's 66 years of age. Since his conviction, he's changed his story many times. He's even claimed that he committed the murders with 2 friends. Joe Nickel, a writer for the Skeptical Inquirer, has stated that the story has changed so much from interview to interview that DeFeo's explanations should be taken, quote, with caution.
Absolutely.
Because he's just a talker, and he's at this point, he's in it for the money. He's in it for the fame.
Is he getting any psychiatric
help? Well, he's in prison, so I think the answer to that is no. Because, you know, prisons don't necessarily rehabilitate criminals. Most of the time, what we do is we take them and we put them in cells, and then we lock them up and throw away the key. There's not very many places that actually invest time in their convicts to try to, you know, help them. Yeah.
Out of curiosity, do you know if he's caused any problems in prison?
I don't think he has. I didn't do any research about that, so I'm not entirely sure. But he's, you know, I mean, he's a little loopy. He's a little cray-cray, yeah. So I don't know, maybe. Maybe he got into a soap fight in the shower or something.
Need to find out if he...
To see if he's, like, violent in prison?
You know, because why would violence of that nature just happen once?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But it's, you know, it's, again, it's just strange. And the story keeps changing. Keeps getting stranger.
Yeah.
So there has been speculation that Don DeFeo had a hand in the killings. The reason why is because I guess they found gunpowder on her nightgown. Now, when a firearm discharges, there's the potential to get gunpowder on clothing if you're the person on the receiving end of the bullet. But I guess it was just one of those theories that, like, people who have picked this story apart have theorized about, but there's no definitive proof that this is actually something that happened.
Well, could it be a possibility that she picked up a gun trying to defend herself?
You know, I mean...
And then he moved it?
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. So, Dawn, too, was murdered by Ronald DeFeo in the same way as her parents and siblings. There has been speculation that Ronald and Dawn were intimately involved. So he was actually involved with his sister. But neither of those theories, either the gunpowder theory or the incest theory, have ever been positively verified. So there's no, and he's never admitted that that was a thing that was going on with him and his sister. Mm-hmm. So 28 days after six people are murdered in this house, the Lutz family moves in. So it's December 18th, 1975. George Lutz, his wife Kathleen or Kathy, and their five children move into 112 Ocean Avenue. The Lutzes bought the house for a meager $80,000. Nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. The realtor even threw in some of the DeFeo family's furniture for $400. So, just imagine, you're a kid, you move into this big, beautiful house, mm-hmm. you're right by the water, you know, you have a boathouse now, it's really pretty.
I know, it looks like a beautiful house.
Yeah, but then, you know, you're sleeping up on the third floor using a bed frame that used to be part of a bed that somebody was shot and murdered in.
Yeah, that would be.
yeah, a little much. That'd be a little much. I think I'd have to draw the line at that. The house itself has sold in recent years for upwards of $1.5 million.
Wow.
Like, really, you know, and they got it for $80,000.
So there's living there now?
There are people living there, yeah. They were able to put a substantial amount down on their mortgage because they'd recently been married. They were newlyweds. And George had a house and Kathy had a house. So they sold those homes and they invested in the Amityville house. Okay. George also intended on moving his home office for a land surveying business that he owned into the basement. So he was going to have his business there. He was going to have his family life there. And they were going to save all this money, basically. Mm-hmm. It was a very exciting time for them. Upon moving in, George and Kathy claim that the paranormal activity began immediately. So they move in. The first thing that happens is their German Shepherd that they had tries to hang itself by jumping over the back fence. I have not known many German Shepherds in my life. I have known a few dogs, though. And let me tell you, I wouldn't put it past a dog to try to strangle itself trying to get at something over the side of a fence. So that, to me, is not paranormal. There's nothing paranormal about that. That's a dog being a dog. Let's see, they also claimed a priest who visited to bless the home was told to, quote, get out by a disembodied voice and was slapped in the face. You might remember that scene from the movie where he walks into the bedroom and the door closes mm-hmm. and there's flies everywhere. That was not a thing. It never happened.
Oh, that was just for the movie?
That was just, yeah, for the purposes of the movie. Mm-hmm. Now, they did say that there were flies in the house, but that's not so outlandish because when you consider, there was six people murdered right. in that house. So, of course, you know, I mean, that furniture that they were murdered on, I mean, I don't know how many days that sat there with, like, right. blood and, you know, bodily fluids and shit on it. I mean, that's not going to attract flies, right? Like, right. if I were a fly, I would be like, ooh, buffet, you know, like, it was fucking...
You know, blood doesn't come out so easy, so...
Yeah.
Buying the furniture, wouldn't there have been some sort of
stain? No, well, they didn't keep the mattresses.
Oh, okay.
They just kept the frames. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think that there was anything left on there, but I don't know. It's just... No, sir, not me. In an interview... this priest, who actually came to the Lutz home to cleanse it, stated, I was blessing the sewing room. It was cold. It was really cold in there. And I'm like, well, gee, this is peculiar. This is the actual priest's words. I can, like, picture this little man saying mm-hmm. this. Because it was a lovely day out, and it was winter, yes, but it didn't account for that kind of coldness. I was also sprinkling holy water, and I heard a rather deep voice behind me saying, get out. It seemed so directed toward me that I was really quite startled. I felt a slap at one point on the face. I felt somebody slap me, and there was nobody there. Now, according to George, these incidents happened within hours of first occupation. the paranormal activity in the home continued to escalate from there. George and Kathy claimed to have heard a marching band parading through their living room. When the marching band wasn't performing, they claimed that there was a sound kind of like a clock radio. If you turned on the radio part and you were switching the stations, you got that static.
Yeah.
That apparently was like a constant sound when nobody was in the room. And then when somebody went into the living room, everything would stop. The porcelain in all of the toilets turned black. In some cases, some people have said that the water in the toilet was like turned into like a black sludge.
Mm-hmm.
George Lutz has specified that it was the porcelain in the toilets that turned black, not the water.
Okay.
So just to get that straight, because that's important in this story. Not at all. I don't know. Slime ran down the walls and out of the keyholes. At one point in one of the documentaries that I watched, it's one of the lawyers that was working with DeFeo, and he's like sitting down and he's talking to the Lutzes, and he's saying, you know, here's a photo, like one of the crime scene photos. And they look at the walls, and there's like this green stuff on the walls, and they're like, Yeah, that's the slime on the walls. Well, it wasn't slime on the walls. It was fingerprint powder.
So the Lutzes knew what had happened when they moved in?
So the speculation is that the Lutzes knew all about what had happened there. Which, when six people get murdered in a town like Amityville, people are going to know about it. Like, you can't keep that kind of shit hush-hush. You know, it's a tight-knit community. It's very small. So, I mean, people are going to be like, yeah, you know. Shit happened there.
Wasn't it in the movie that they didn't know?
Yeah, I think there was or something implied about
that they didn't know.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. Let's see. George would awake.
Then they did it.
Yeah, right? That was your own fucking fault. So George would awake every morning at 3:15 a.m., which supposedly that was the time of the murders. DeFeo has specified that the time of the murders was 3:02. He was very specific about that, but the Lutzes say 3:15 was when they woke up. Kathy would have nightmares about DeFeo wandering the house and slaughtering the entire family. A demonic pig with glowing red eyes named Jody, supposedly a friend of George's youngest daughter, Missy, had been seen hovering outside a second story window. There's been a lot of people who have said, well, like neighbors have said that there was actually a cat in the neighborhood that they called Pig.
Mm-hmm.
And it would sometimes like be up there because there was a tree mm-hmm. and he would like get in the tree and then be up there by the window. So it wasn't actually a flying demonic pig.
Okay.
It was a cat named Pig. And there was like pictures that Missy had drawn of this cat named Pig. But you know, Lutz always, yeah. And Lutz was always very specific that, oh, no, she's not drawing a cat. See, that's, and it's a little kid's drawing, and it clearly mm-hmm. looks like a cat. But Lutz was like, no, that's a demonic pig walking through the snow. Nobody can tell me differently. Whatever.
Okay.
All of this and more were reported by the family, but how much of what George Lutz has claimed happened can be believed? In the book released in 1977, The Amityville Horror, A True Story, by author Jay Anson, Anson crafted several scenarios that may or may not have happened while the Lutzes lived at 112 Ocean Avenue. So those experiences are as follows. George would wake up around 3:15 every morning and would go and check the boathouse. Later, he would learn that this was the estimated time of the DeFeo killings. Again, 3:02. The house was plagued by swarms of flies despite the winter weather. There have been flies here during the winter. Like, I see them in this room sometimes, inexplicably, or, like, in the bathroom. And I'm right. like, what the fuck are you doing here? It's the middle of the winter. Like, go back right. to sleep. And then I kill them and whatever. And I murder them horribly. But it's, you know, it's not uncommon. Yeah, like, it's not uncommon, though, to see flies that time of year. I don't know. Kathy had vivid nightmares about the murders and discovered the order in which they occurred and the rooms where they took place. That's obviously not something you would learn from, I don't know, a fucking newspaper at the time, You know, like you're sitting down eating your Cheerios and reading the newspaper about these brutal murders. The Lutz children also began sleeping on their stomachs, the same way that the dead bodies of the DeFeo in the DeFeo murders had been found. Obviously, children never do that. They never sleep on their stomachs. Kathy would feel the sensation of being embraced in a loving manner by an unseen force. Yeah, so apparently whatever this was had the hots for. George discovered a small hidden room about 4 feet by 5 feet behind shelving in the basement. The walls were painted red, and the room did not appear in blueprints of the house. The room became known as the Red Room.
Red Room.
This room had a profound effect on their dog, Harry, who refused to go near it and cowered as if sensing something ominous. I know. There were cold spots and odors of perfume and excrement in areas of the house where no wind drafts or piping could explain the source. While
so they found poop in the corners of the house.
I don't know. Somebody was just going shit in there. I don't know. Maybe it was the dog. You know, the dog got scared and took a shit in the corner. I don't know.
Dogs do that.
Dogs do that. Yes, they do. Let's see. While tending the fire, George and Kathy saw an image of a demon with half of its head blown out. And then it was burned into the soot in the back of the fireplace. Apparently they saw this face. The Lutz's 5-year-old daughter, Missy, developed an imaginary friend named Jody, a demonic pig-leg creature with glowing red eyes. I called bullshit on that one. In the early morning hours of Christmas Day 1975, George looked up at the house after checking on the boathouse and saw Jody standing behind Missy at her bedroom window. When he ran up to her room, he found her fast asleep with her small rocking chair slowly rocking back and forth.
Okay.
Back and forth. Back and forth. George would wake up to the sound of the front door slamming. He'd race downstairs and find the dog sleeping soundly at the front door. Nobody else heard the sound, although it was loud enough to wake the whole house. George would hear what was described as a marching band tuning up, or what sounded like a clock radio playing not quite on frequency. He'd go downstairs, and then the sound would cease.
So, now, I've been dreaming and had dreams where I heard elephants in the house. And
elephants?
It really sounded like elephants. So, you can dream and think that you hear.
Oh, yeah. You absolutely
super
can.
Loud noises.
I have woken up in the middle of the night thinking that somebody is talking to me.
Oh.
And it sounds like they're yelling at me. And I wake up and there's nothing. There's nobody. It's just me. In the room, freaked out because somebody's been yelling at me for, like, however long. I don't know. George realized that he bore a strong resemblance to Ronald DeFeo Jr. and began drinking at the Witch's Brew Bar, where DeFeo was once a regular customer. If you look at pictures of young Lutz and young DeFeo, they look similar, but that was a popular hairstyle back then, and a lot of men had the beards going on. So it's not like, that's kind of a reach. Like, you're not channeling him.
Yeah.
I think that was part of it. It was like some sort of like psychic channeling or something. When closing Missy's window, which Missy said that Jody had just climbed out of, Kathy saw red eyes glowing at her. While in bed, Kathy received welts on her chest caused by an unseen force and was levitated 2 feet into the air. 2 whole friggin' feet. Locks on doors and windows in the house were damaged by an unseen force. Cloven hoof prints were found in the snow. They were attributed to an enormous pig.
Not deer.
They were found on January 1st, 1976. Green gelatin-like ooze, like slimy ooze, was coming out of the walls in the hall. Also from the keyhole in the...
Did they save any of it?
In the playroom door in the attic? No. No. It's all hearsay. It's not. A 12-inch crucifix hung in the living room by Kathy, revolved until it was upside down and gave off a sour smell. George tripped over a 4-foot-high China lion ornament in the living room and found bite marks on one of his ankles. Later, this lion would reappear in the living room after George had moved it upstairs into the sewing room. George saw Kathy transform into an old woman of 90. The hair wild, shocking white, her face a mass of wrinkles and ugly lines, saliva dripping from a toothless mouth. Whatever affliction she eventually died from, she died fairly young.
Mm-hmm.
After they moved to California, she actually passed away. But when she died, she looked twice as old as she actually was.
Oh.
So they say that when she saw, you know, when George saw the image of her in the mirror, that's what she looked like when she died.
Mm.
So, I don't know. There might actually be, like, a kind of a kernel of truth in there. I don't know how deeply it's buried. You might need a backhoe to get it out, because a shovel is not going to do it. But, you know, it's, you never know, right? You just never know. Missy would sing constantly while in her room. Whenever she left the room, she would stop singing, and then upon returning would resume singing where she left off. Have you ever seen a 5-year-old girl randomly fucking singing to herself, wandering around the house? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amen, sister. Like, seriously? I mean, like, my niece invents her own fucking songs.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, goes around the house singing this random songs where they don't even make sense.
Right.
But she, like, invents her own little musical ditties and whatever. Like, come on. Like, 5-year-olds do that shit. On one occasion, Kathy heard what sounded like a window being opened and closed through the sewing room door, even though she was sure that there was nobody in there. That window in the sewing room, apparently there were some paranormal investigators that went into that room and they checked out that window because it was said that if you walked into that window or walked into that room, that window would fly up.
Mm-hmm.
Just inexplicably. So they began going through and trying to figure out, like, what was going on. Well, I guess when you stepped on a part of the floor just right, you could actually cause the window to open.
Oh, okay.
And it was because the balances or something were off.
Uh-huh.
So the minute you hit that part of the floor, that window would just shoot up. And one guy was like, I went in there with this other investigator or whatever, and he stepped on that part of the floor and the window flew up. He was like, I shit my pants. Like... So all of this, everything that happened, caused the Lutzes to flee the Amityville house. They gave it back to the bank. They were like, fuck this shit. And apparently it was so bad, whatever happened there was so bad, that it wasn't like, we're going to go stay at a hotel and find another house eventually somewhere, you know, in New York or whatever. They had to go to California. So they literally left all of their shit and moved to California. It was so bad. So there's something there. There's like little kernels of truth throughout this entire story, but it's just been so sensationalized and it's so ridiculous that you just can't, you know, Now, it seems as if all of this Amityville horror stuff is not all hogwash. According to historyvershollywood.com, there was one piece of controversial evidence captured during a paranormal investigation that could verify an otherworldly presence within the house.
Mm-hmm.
They say the debate over the alleged Amityville ghost image has been going on ever since George Lutz first revealed it during an interview on the Merv Griffin Show in 1979. It had been taken 3 years earlier in 1976 by Ed and Lorraine Warren, who, of course, were there, because when shit hits the fan,
they're there.
So their team of paranormal investigators, namely a professional photographer by the name of Gene Campbell, he was the individual that captured this image. Campbell had set up a camera equipped with black and white infrared film to shoot automatically during the night. Numerous rolls of film were used, with only one suspicious image being captured. The Amityville ghost image shows a figure with white eyes peering out of a doorway. Some believe that it's a demon or possibly the ghost of the murdered DeFeo boy, John. Others have concluded that it's likely one of the investigators, in particular a man named Paul Bertz. They cite that his white eyes were possibly due to the infrared camera film. So they essentially say that it's not a thing. If you guys want to actually see that photo, I did put a copy of it on the blog, so you can see it, but I'm going to show it to Mimi and see what Mimi thinks of it.
Oh.
It's pretty interesting.
Looks like a boy.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, it doesn't look like a man.
Yeah.
Like, it looks very short, and there's no, like, I don't know, like, I almost expect there to be some sort of like change to the space around him, you know, so that you can tell that he's there. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a very weird photo.
Definitely looks like a child and has a child features.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he almost looks elf-like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the end of his nose turns up just so, and, like, his little ears and stuff, he's just really, I don't know. But, yeah, and then in the bottom right-hand corner, they have a picture of John DeFeo. And they say, you know, this is the image of the person that we captured. So, I don't know. You know, I mean, it adds more interest to the story.
Right.
So, as of 2013, no other owners of the home have experienced any paranormal phenomena. Nothing. Not a damn thing. Imagine that.
That's very interesting.
Not a damn thing. In 2006, George Lust passed away suddenly. One of his last interviews that he ever gave can be found at ghostvillage.com. I've also added that link to the blog in case anybody wants to read it. He answers a lot of the similar questions that he's been asked in the past about the house and whatever. But still, you know, if you want to check it out, you can. In many ways, the Lutz's purchase of the home was very straightforward. They saw the house, they heard about the history, they discussed numbers and commute times, like how long is it going to take me to get from here to here? Is it feasible? Basically, the kind of shit that you talk about with your significant other when you're considering the purchase of a house.
Mm-hmm.
It was all just very in line. It was all very normal. So, I don't know. I mean, I suppose we'll never really know what actually did or did not take place inside the Amityville house.
Have the Lutz kids done any interviews?
Well, actually, there is one of the Lutzes actually came out a little while ago and he gave his story to somebody. But it's... Again, it's, you know, oh, well, now I need money.
Mm.
So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to revive this again. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know, the only thing that we can be sure of is that the legend of the Amityville Horror House will survive.
Yep.
And it's going to be around for many, many, many more generations to come.
Yep.
Because it's just one of those things, you know, it's just never going to go away.
I wonder if anyone's ever tried hypnotizing, what's his name, DeFeo.
Oh, who friggin' knows? That guy. I'm sure, like...
Truth serum.
The, you know, the...
lie detector.
Well, that's not admissible in court.
So? Would still be neat.
Yeah, the documentary that I was watching, the medium... and DeFeo, you know, are sitting down there having this conversation. And he's very irreverent about everything. Like, you can tell he doesn't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just like, oh, look, I'm on camera again. Ching, 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 ching. Like, he doesn't give a shit about anything. But some of the shit that's coming out of her mouth, I'm like, wow, you should really, like, tone it down. Because you're talking about a family that's been murdered. And you're sitting down trying to wring blood out of a turnip.
Mm-hmm.
Not the first time, again. But, you know, ultimately, he's a murderer.
Right.
And he's where he belongs.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, he killed 6 people.
Right.
And that's right. That's where he should be for the rest of his life. So, or, you know, if he happens to live for 6 concurrent life sentences.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Well... He could potentially live till he's 90 or 100.
Well, I mean, it's possible. Yeah. But, you know, at least, you know, he's come before the parole board and they've been like, dude, no. Like, you killed six people. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but, like, he copped to the murder of his parents. Mm-hmm. And then he said that they just tacked on all of the other murders. Because they were like, well, it could only be you. So he made it seem like the police didn't even do an investigation. They were like, well, obviously it was you, the end. I'm sure there was something done, but, I mean, you just don't.
Well, you know, you've heard stories of kids who've murdered their parents that drag a friend into it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very possible he had a friend with them.
Well, and there have been tales that, I guess, the father was involved in some, like, mob activity. They owned a car lot, used car lot. And I guess DeFeo has said that he's seen his father, like, dispose of bodies for the mob and, like, put them in the crusher. And, like, you know, they had, like, a junkyard and a used car lot or something like that. He'd seen people put them in the crusher and in the trunks of cars. He's like, I've seen at least four people. I know that he's, you know, taking care of nine. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I feel like they haven't found any information about that, so.
I don't know, because I don't think that the mob, quote unquote, would kill a whole family and just leave them there.
Well, I mean, it seems to me.
Dispose of everybody.
Yeah, like, it seems to me that they would, you know, maybe take care of the father, but, you know, if they were going to do the whole family, that seems, you know, to put yourself in that house and, you know, I don't know.
A chance on leaving evidence.
Well, take a chance on somebody seeing you going in and out of the house. You know, I mean, like, then you have all these witnesses. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. I'm sure that it was just him.
Yeah.
And he killed his whole family in the end. But yeah, so that's the true crime fix.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah.
You tell a good story.
Well, you know, I try. But like I said, I mean, these outside sources that I had to use for this one, I had to pull in a lot of outside sources. I put them all on the blog so that people can, you know, go and read the rest of them. But yeah, it was a big one. Big fish. Yep.
So, last week we went to St. Louis Cemetery number 1 in New Orleans to visit and learn about Marie Laveau, the Voodoo Queen. This week we are again visiting St. Louis Cemetery number 1 to visit another supposed haunter of the cemetery, Henry Vignes, V-I-G-N-E-S. Henry was a sailor, always traveling. What he considered home was a boarding house in New Orleans. He had no friends or family to take care of his valuables, so he asked the boarding house proprietor to hold on to his papers and keep them safe. The proprietor promised he would do so, but he lied.
Right.
One of his papers was a deed to a tomb in the cemetery that Henry had. It was his family's tomb.
Yeah.
So the proprietor sold the deed. Mm-hmm. And kept the money.
Oh, what an ass bag.
So Henry returned home to find out that the proprietor did this, and he got very ill, and he died soon after.
Henry died or the proprietor?
Henry died.
Oh, okay.
And before he was able to get anything rectified So because he was penniless, only being a sailor, he didn't earn that much. They put him in the pauper's grave areas, so he's buried in an unmarked grave.
Yep.
Poor Henry. So, people believe they see Henry's ghost walking the cemetery. He's seen as a tall, blue-eyed, natural person. He looks like a real person, but you can tell that he's ethereal.
There's just something about him.
People have actually spoken with him, and they have him on voice recorder asking people if they know where the Vignes tomb is. because he can't find it. Some people said he's been seen at funerals, asking if there's room for him in the tomb. Poor Henry.
Yeah.
It's thought that Henry's voice was caught on camera saying, "I need to rest."
Oh.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. Right. He just wants somewhere to sleep.
Huh.
So then we're going to go back, and another popular ghost in the area, and he's been caught on not just video, but on camera.
Mm.
His name is Alphonse.
Okay.
No last name, just Alphonse.
Hmm.
It's said that his ghost will often grab the hand of visitors, asking them to bring him home. No one really knows what home he looks for. His spirit is also seen picking flowers off other graves and laying them on his tomb. But how do we know it's his tomb? That was the only thing.
Yeah.
You know, I tried to search for Alphonse. They came up with the name of a jazz player who died in the 60s, 1960s. Oh, okay. I don't think that's the same Alphonse.
Hmm.
So how do they know that that's actually this Alphonse's tomb? I don't know.
Right.
I couldn't find any more about his tomb. So.
Well, you'd almost have to go back through, like, cemetery records.
Yeah.
And that would take a long time, right. I think.
There is a rumor that perhaps he was murdered by someone in the Pinade family. P-I-N-E-A-D. Because his spirit has been seen warning visitors to stay away from their family tomb.
Huh.
Okay, so then I looked up the Pinade family.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't find anything on the Pinade family. But numerous people have said that they've seen something there saying, go away, go away, go away.
Mm.
Maybe somebody out there in hearing land.
In podcast land?
Yes. Maybe they'll know more than I do. So, a future inhabitant of Cemetery Number 1 in New Orleans will be that of actor Nicolas Cage.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned him last time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cage was once owner of the very haunted LaLaurie Mansion. And he also owned another famous building, which I forgot to write down. He was the owner for 3 years, and in 2009, he went bankrupt.
Oh.
So he lost, not bankrupt, but they foreclosed on the LaLaurie Mansion in this other building.
Huh.
But he's always been a real big supporter of New Orleans, and he loves New Orleans. And,
right.
So he actually bought a tomb in the cemetery, but this tomb is shaped like a pyramid, and it's 9 foot tall.
Oh.
And it's close to Marie Laveau's tomb.
Okay.
Some say that he feels that he's been cursed by the LaLaurie Mansion. And that he is hopeful that being so close to Marie Laveau, that she'll protect him in the afterlife.
Huh.
So, but as of right now, he's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only hope that when his time comes, he will rest in peace. So that's my visit to New Orleans Cemetery number one again.
Yeah, that's interesting. So is there any particular reason why he decided to buy that particular tomb, or he just thought it was cool, or
it didn't say why he bought it, but
maybe he was I'm gonna own something in New Orleans. So
and
I'm gonna own
a
this
little nuts, so.
Well, you know, he is a little cuckoo. That's Nicky Cage for you.
But he's very much into the lore and tales of New Orleans and very fascinated by the whole thing.
Well, so. You know, I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah.
It's
kind of like one of us.
Yeah.
So maybe somehow he'll hear our podcast.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Well, I just called him a nut, so.
maybe I can tweet him. But
when I hear from him, it'll probably be with like a fucking lawsuit or something.
No, because we're nuts. It's nuts in a good way.
Nuts in a good way. You're nuts.
He's still one of my favorite actors. So.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite Nicolas Cage movie, I think, would have to be The Weatherman. I think that was my favorite.
Okay.
Where he shows up at some family function or something. It's like his father's living funeral or something, and he has like. Just shit down all over one side of his coat because somebody threw something at him.
Oh,
Oh. Out a car window.
I don't remember it at all. Now it's I have to look it up on Netflix.
It's a good movie. And he's, like, trying to establish a relationship with his daughter, and he's trying to, like, find things in common with her, and he and his wife are separated, and it's just a bad situation. And then on top of that, he's a weatherman who can't ever get the weather right. So it's, like, he just fails on all fronts. But, yeah, it's a very good movie. Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
But he was in Ghost Rider, right?
Oh, yeah. That was him. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, yep. Yeah, you
love
know,
that movie.
I've only ever seen half of it.
Oh.
And I keep seeing the same half. Like, I see, like, the towards the end, you know? I catch it, like, in the middle and then towards the end, but I don't ever get the beginning of it.
Oh, well, I've never maybe actually we'll have seen to it. Watch that, that Saturday night thing.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that for the next episode, we plan on talking about Elisa Lam over whatever we did. Maybe you'll make lamb, and then we'll lamb over Elisa Lam.
I've made veal, I've never made, like, lamb chops.
We'll have to wait and see.
I know.
Very excited.
Maybe he'll smoke some lamb chops.
Oh. No, you don't like smoked lamb chops?
I don't know, but... if he's never done it before, I don't want him doing it when you guys come.
You don't want him to try it?
Uh-huh.
No, no.
He made brisket last weekend, and he smoked it for 13 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And when the kids had it, they said it was so dry. And he didn't put, like, a wet sauce on it. He made it, quote-unquote, Texas style with just salt and pepper.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they said it wasn't very good.
Oh, now, you know what the trick to getting a real good, like, juicy brisket is?
Hmm.
You wrap it in plastic wrap.
Okay.
And then you wrap it in tin foil. And you do, like, two or three heavy layers of tin foil. And then you just cook it in the oven for hours.
Oh.
And then you open it up and you just peel the plastic wrap off and you take it out and it's
but
beautiful.
But doesn't the plastic
wrap? No, because you wrap it in tin foil. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's interesting. You'll have to tell Bill that when you see
him. Yeah, well, Joanne can tell because that's not my thing.
Okay.
Joanne does all the cooking and I do all the chopping, except for dessert. You'll get to enjoy dessert from me.
You guys like ribs?
So, I love ribs.
We can do good ribs.
Yeah, I love ribs with sauce, ribs without sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I can sit down and eat ribs until they're coming out my eyes. I like ribs.
Now I'm getting hungry. See what you did?
Yeah. All right. So that is it for us this week?
Yes.
We're all set to go. And then next time we'll plan on that whole Elisa Lam thing so that we'll have kind of, it'll kind of be like a bit of quote unquote time off. Yeah. Cause it'll just be kind of a relaxed recording and whatever. Right. We'll just have fun with it. But
yeah.
So that is it for us this week. Thank you guys for listening. Appreciate all of you. We will talk to you next time.
Alrighty. Take care and peace out.
All right. And as always, stay spooky. Stretched out on